On this week's 51%, a class helps students recognize domestic violence, hear about the hormone fix.
Menopause is mandatory, but suffering is optional.
And Dr. Jerry Burns wants to share some good news. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
Till it happens to you.
One in three American adolescents is a victim of physical, sexual, emotional, or verbal abuse from a dating partner. To 20-year-old Kalia Smith, domestic violence felt normal, something that happened a lot. But a class helped her realize that healthy relationships are possible. The class was part of a program called STAR, which stands for Students Talking About Relationships. It's an initiative of the nonprofit Women Against Abuse.
There I was in a relationship class. Ugh, great. My school made us take a lot of classes, mindfulness, yoga, you name it. I don't need this class, I thought. My relationship was fine. Our fights seemed normal. Sometimes my boyfriend would push me, but I thought nothing of it. One day in the class, the teacher started asking if we knew the warning signs of an abusive relationship. That was intriguing to me, so I started to pay attention. Here's Mr. Christian, one of the teachers. We talked about how I changed in his class.
Do you, Kalia, remember what was it? Was the moment that kind of switched it for you when the light, kind of flipped on?
It was after a class, and I went home, and we had a little fight and an argument, and then it clicked in my head that I didn't really do anything for him to start hitting me or doing anything to me. I look at things differently now, like the night on the couch at his mother's place. We were watching his favorite show, Supernatural. I wasn't too intrigued, so I got on my phone to check Instagram. After about 10 minutes, I put my phone face down. He looked at me really angry. Then my phone vibrated and flashed. 1, 2, 3, 4 times. He picked it up. I wasn't trying to hide anything, so I didn't panic. He unlocked my phone and read the message out loud. "Hey, sexy, I like your pictures, and I think you might be the woman of my dreams." "I don't know who that is," I said, "or why he's messaging me." He threw my phone at my face, busting my lip. Then he climbed on top of me and wrapped his hands around my neck. He said, "Lie to me and my grip will get tighter." "Who is this man?" "I don't know," I tried to say, but he was cutting off my air. His hands got so tight that I couldn't feel my face. I started to get lightheaded and started to pass out. He let go just in time and I woke up. He looked at me, anger still in his eyes. He grabbed me by the waist and threw me back into the living room, and I really go flying across the room. I kicked him between the legs with all I had, and he fell to the floor. I don't know where my strength came from, but I got up and ran out the door. We went on like this for a while, and I hoped he would change. But that relationship class made me realize that my boyfriend was dangerous. The teachers were talking about scary things. "Sometimes you get beat," they said, "beaten really badly and end up in the hospital, or even die from a beating." I knew I didn't want to die because I have a daughter. So while I hoped he would change, I also started to understand that if he didn't, I would have to leave.
You know, I had an eighth grader tell me one time that I was too late because she had already gone through this, right, to talk to her. Which is kind of heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's essentially why we do the work. Like, we know young people are less likely to talk to adults about what's going on.
These days, I'm happy. My new boyfriend shows me what it's like to be truly cared for and loved. He appreciates me and reminds me every day that he'll never hurt me in any way. I received a special gift from him on Valentine's Day that I'll never forget, a promise ring. His promise to me is to love me through my flaws and my ups and downs. He lets me know how beautiful I am and that he'll never hurt me. If anyone is out there dealing with an abusive partner, I just want you to know that you don't deserve that. It isn't your fault. You deserve better. And if you think you're not pretty enough for that guy or girl you like, look in the mirror, take a good look at yourself, find something you like about yourself, and say your compliment to yourself out loud. You were made perfect.
Kalia Smith, Ann Hoffman, Katie Davis, and Sandy Florimond collaborated on this story for Philly Audio Diaries, a program that teaches young people how to tell stories and record their lives. The Midwest All-Star Wrestling League recently invited wrestlers from across the country to compete in Minnesota. Behind all the trash-talking and body-slamming, the wrestlers shared a common goal: raise money for Native women who are victims of abuse. KFAI's Joey Peters and Matthew Schneeman were there and filed this report.
In Mendota Heights, I'm Joey Peters.
And I'm Matthew Schneeman. Here in Minnesota, pro wrestling sounds like this.
Turn up the bed!
And in the Midwest All-Star Wrestling League, it can also sound like this. Surrounding the ring are drummers, singers, and dancers. This is MAW's Grand Slam event. We're at Henry Sibley High School. Several local and national pro wrestling legends are gathered here tonight. But perhaps even more noteworthy are two indigenous pro wrestlers who will battle in the ring.
Grand Slam is a fundraiser for a battered women's shelter. Brittany Babb Amatrano of Women of Nations sees no irony in this.
Yes, because everyone assumes that wrestling is condoning violence, mm-hmm. and that's completely the opposite. If you meet a lot of our wrestlers, a lot of them are big advocates and supporters of survivors and victims of domestic abuse, sex trafficking, and sexual assault. And last year, they were very passionate about doing this for this cause, and now it's just bigger and better this year.
I think one of the most empowering part of this event this year is the women that are also wrestling this year.
Tanel Ziegler is Women of Nations cultural coordinator.
There's a Women of Nations belt that comes along with it and a cup.
Desi Dorada was among the wrestlers fighting for this cup. She's a member of the Kawia tribe in California, and she's been wrestling for 3 years.
I've done events that were fundraisers for other types of causes, but nothing like this, and definitely nothing with a indigenous theme. I think that it's good to give the recognition that indigenous people deserve, that we never get, that we're always overlooked. This is a healthy example of what you can do to influence others to kind of see something different and like say, oh, I don't have to be this way. There's stuff in this world that I can do.
Desi Dorada won the Women of Nations Cup, which was presented by Minnesota State Representative Mary Kunish Podine.
This was fitting because Kunish Podine is the author of a bill that would create a state task force to investigate missing and murdered Indigenous women.
You know, wrestling was big when I was growing up, back when there was Vern Gagne and some of the old school late 70s, early 80s. But it's been years. I've forgotten just how entertaining this is.
Austin Arrow is a member of the Sistan Wapton Sioux tribe.
And he fought pro wrestling legend D'Lo Brown.
You want it? You got it! A tag team match right now! Ring the bell!
After subjecting each other to an onslaught of kinetic pulls and body slams, the two embraced each other at the end of the match.
That's right. And for Arrow, using pile drivers and suplexes to generate money for a woman's shelter is perfectly acceptable.
I mean, just coming from, with my background too, I grew up in a house with domestic violence, and I knew, I mean, seeing it firsthand, what it can do to a family, and what I feel like professional wrestling does. Anybody who follows professional wrestling, if you're not familiar with it yet, and if you're new to it yet, professional wrestling brings people together, and that's our huge message, is everybody comes together and sits around and we enjoy a great show.
The event ended up pulling in over $21,000 for Women of Nations. For KFAI, I'm Joey Peters.
And I'm Matthew Schneeman.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg returns with her 51% segment, Force of Nature. This time, she interviews Dr. Anna Kabeka, a gynecologist and obstetrician who specializes in regenerative and functional medicine. In addition, she's the author of The Hormone Fix, the natural way to balance your hormones, burn fat, and alleviate the symptoms of the perimenopause and menopause and beyond. Ufberg asked how Dr. Kabeca began her journey in this realm.
Well, I tell you, it really stems from personal tragedy. When I was 38, we suffered a family tragedy, and I was shortly thereafter diagnosed with permanent ovarian failure, premature ovarian failure, early menopause, and I was told I would never be able to have another child again. And that literally led me on a journey around the world looking for answers. I mean, my doctor's bag was empty. You know, I trained at Emory University, and I felt I knew so much, but there was nothing for me. And yet, in this journey around the world, I found natural healing modalities that I hadn't been exposed to. And lo and behold, at age 41, I naturally conceived and delivered a beautiful baby girl and reversed menopause and, you know, reversed infertility, which was such a turning point for me because we didn't talk about reversing menopause or, you know, reversing. The concept of reversing infertility was intervention, not really reversal. And so it changed the way I practiced, and I kept digging for more natural answers as I continued on through my life.
It is so inspiring to hear your story. So many women suffer from feeling that there aren't any solutions for them. What specific recommendations do you give about how to begin this process?
Well, I think there's so much, you know, again, so much suffering because we haven't really looked at the right approach to helping us through menopause. So I teach that menopause is mandatory, but suffering is optional. And what's really fascinating is that so many of us, so many women, don't realize how much of this transition is really hormone related, from anxiety, mood swings, you know, brain fog, memory loss, you know, irritability. You know, when we hate our husband only 2 weeks of the month, right? That's hormones, not necessarily our husband. So getting to this, realizing that what I recognized in my life, that I needed to not just empower the reproductive hormones, as a gynecologist, of course, I want that, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, but the major hormones, oxytocin, cortisol, and insulin. And empowering these hormones help our reproductive hormones and help this transition of life, menopause, andropause, for the rest of our life, this hormonal transition. So the strategies that I've implemented and I write about in my book, I call it the keto green way. So the first thing I recommend people to do is to begin intermittent fasting. That allows your body to rest and digest, and also for insulin, this powerful hormone, to become more sensitive, because we're really running an epidemic of insulin resistance, as we know, in this nation. So we decrease insulin, it also decreases glucose, and that decreases inflammation, which is a rapid ager, and we certainly don't want that. So intermittent fasting, just 13 hours between dinner, preferably eating by 7 p.m., to break fast 13 to 16 hours later. Yeah, you can have your coffee in the morning, but maybe without the cream. The second is to add greens and healthy fats. Now, you know, growing up through college in the 80s, we were on the anti-fat, right? Well, healthy fats are so important. So this concept of healthy fats helps us get into ketosis and stay lower carbs, but need a lot of greens because of the alkalinizers, the detoxifiers, the minerals that they provide to our body. So greens and healthy fats would be the second thing. Alkalinity helps to fight acidity, which again leads to inflammation and disease, pain, fatigue, foggy brain, right? Soreness, all of those things.
Give us an example of healthy fat.
Oh, perfect. Like avocado, salmon, olive oil, coconut oil, olives and, you know, ghee, purified butters. I mean, those are really good. I mean, those are brain foods. That's brain foods. That's healthy fats for our body. And so by getting healthier fats and good quality protein, staying low on the carbs, but getting plenty of alkalinizers, hence my concept of keto green, we get our body into a fat-burning state. And that puts us into ketosis. Ketones are used for brain fuel and give us that higher energy. So we modify our diet's part of it, but lifestyle's a really big part too. And then the importance, though, because we hear keto everywhere, right? The importance is adding in the alkalinizers, the plant-sourced food, the natural healthy grains, et cetera, to help our body process, digest, add fiber for our gut health and gut microbiome. This helps with hormonal balance. The third thing is really about the lifestyle choices that we make, the habits that we incorporate into our life that really fuel us. So when we add in, for example, stress management techniques and incorporating into nature, these things really focus on the other two major hormones. I mentioned insulin earlier, and then cortisol and oxytocin. So these are hugely powerful hormones. And so as we regulate cortisol and increase oxytocin, we have more brain clarity, we have more energy, we have more longevity, we just feel relationally better.
These sound like recommendations for all women, though, just not women that mm-hmm. are fighting, you know, menopausal symptoms. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. I know definitely in the perimenopause, menopause, getting into ketosis, getting into this fat-burning state is harder, right? It's just harder for us. It's easier when we're in our 20s and our 30s and we have a different, you know, mitochondria is higher functioning. We have higher levels of adiponectin, another hormone that helps us utilize, you know, fat for fuel. So as we age and our reproductive hormones decline, this becomes even more important.
I heard you once say, when we can't think well, we can't feel well. Can you elaborate on that?
Right, right, and goes both ways. And so with the brain fog, and this is what I struggled with. I hit a second menopause at 48, and so I was struggling with brain fog. I'd lost clarity. I was fatigued. And just get the concept of bringing us into ketosis to get a stronger fuel for the brain. So our brain will use glucose or ketones for fuel, and glucose is to gasoline as ketones are to jet fuel. And as we become metabolically more, let's say, efficient or conservative, we have a more difficult time using ketones for fuel in the brain. And so we experience things like brain fog, early signs of memory loss, right? And we worry that it's dementia, but it's actually that we're not providing the right fuel for our brain at this time. And that will, you know, lead to foggy thinking, but our thoughts help us achieve hormonal balance. So we have to think positive thoughts. And that helps us increase oxytocin, beginning appreciation rituals, beginning gratitude practices or journaling, gratitude journaling. That can make a difference because that will help us decrease cortisol, increase oxytocin in just this simple way. And as we do that, as we exercise that muscle, essentially, we become clearer in thought. And not just that, our relationships get better because we're less stressed. And recognizing that can really improve our quality of life and the quality of our relationships as we get older. So think ourselves well is a big part of it, but it requires discipline and practice. So it works both ways. Think well to feel well and feel well to think well.
Oh, I love that. You know, in your practice, do you find that most of the women that you're recommending, the more greens, the intermittent fasting, the little, very little grains or dairy, that they can tolerate this long term, that it's a diet that's feasible for, you know, a working woman, a mom with kids, that this is a diet that they can incorporate into their day-to-day life?
It absolutely is, Sharon. You know, it's simple, and once you get the keto green concept down, it really makes life easy because you recognize, you know, if you're making a plate and maybe it's steak and I don't know what, or you recognize you need to add the greens in there, you need to add the fiber, you need to add some additional healthy fats like olive oil and add some other alkalinizers like lemon juice or additional greens. And just knowing that will help your hormones balance. So as you gain this control, you feel more energetic. It is easy and it's necessary, but one thing, and I write about this in my book, I kind of have my 10-80-10 rule. So 80% of the time, keto green, really, you know, the healthy intermittent fasting, 2 to 3 meals a day, no snacking, and make sure those meals have a good combination of greens, which is, you know, providing fiber, healthy quality proteins and healthy fats. And then 10% fasting and 10% feasting. We have to celebrate too. So celebration, enjoying food, enjoying what you like, that's a part of life. And so the 10-80-10 rule really falls into that's easy to incorporate into our lives. So we can have feasting. We can celebrate and you know, with our children's parties when we're having a big Sunday dinner, whatever it may be. But the majority of the time, that moderation of the keto green way is very empowering.
I think that's so important that we still recognize that we're here to celebrate life and to enjoy as well. And it's not so strict that we can't step out of those parameters while still doing a really good thing for our bodies. Thanks so much, Dr. Annika Becca, for being with us today. And this is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. And now writer Dr. Jerry Byrne shines a light in the news darkness.
My husband told me that he's on a news break. He is exhausted by it. Join the club. I altered my news habit months ago because my conscientious focus on it was stressing me out way too much. That said, neither of us are irresponsible in our self-imposed news brownouts. We both stay involved at a distance, though, so we can simultaneously be responsible citizens and engage in self-care. But I also like to hear news that isn't dark, news that doesn't stir up extreme emotions, and news that doesn't highlight the darkest corners of humanity. I need stories about the lighter corners. And in case you too find yourself hungry for more light, here's a little something to lighten up your news day. And it starts at a folk festival. They are wonderful places where singer-songwriters gather to perform, where cultural artists share old and new forms of traditional music, where people dance, giant puppets roam, ribbons fly, and colorful clothing, including but not limited to tie-dye, abounds. Folk festivals are renowned for having crafts on sale, multiple stages, family play areas, and food vendor heaven. I mean, you can buy deep-fried blooming onions in one booth to be followed up by vegan Caribbean food or freshly pressed juices in the next. Now, we often perform at the Falcon Ridge Folk Festival, a wonderful gathering on the Dobbs family farm in Hillsdale, New York. With a huge dance tent, a tented family stage, children's craft area, and two other big music stages, the mown hay fields at the farm are dotted with festive white tents, and the hillside is flecked with smaller, colorful tents where dedicated festival goers theoretically sleep at night. Since this festival is almost in our backyard, we sleep at home. But our arrival to the festival site is always a bit frazzled. We park in a grassy field that is considered the performer parking lot and lug our instruments, bags, food, dance shoes, and rain gear onto the festival grounds. On Sunday of the 2019 festival, we thankfully didn't need our rain gear, so that lightened our load a little. But we had three stringed instruments that couldn't sit in our sunbaked car until our later afternoon set, so we hauled the guitar, banjo, and harp to the instrument check trailer. Okay, time for a little transparency here. Barry very kindly hauled those things. I took off to get a dance in before meeting a friend. Yes, he's a nice guy, that husband of mine. Anyway, we went through the festival day doing the things one must do. Barry bought a crepe. I did some contra dancing. Barry listened to the Beatles set at the workshop stage for a while. I danced with a friend to part of that set and poked around the vendors. Then Barry and I briefly rehearsed under the shade in the volunteer tent. When it was time for our set, Barry went to the instrument check to get the instruments. I went to the car to get one of the hand drums. But when I got there, I took a double take. The front passenger door was wide open. I couldn't believe it. In the morning frazzle, I apparently left the thing wide open. That means that our car was wide open for over 4 hours. Now, this was our gig car, not our regular car. The only stuff of value someone would get from the other car are cloth bags, phone chargers, papers, and empty bags of dried dates or ginger. The gig car is another story. There are many other instruments in there beyond the strings. There's another drum, a full-on sound system with microphones and mic stands. There are suitcases and boxes of all kinds, a festival-friendly lawn chair, even a treasure chest that's the vessel for our books and recordings. Yet, when I looked through the car, I discovered that everything of value was still there. Absolutely nothing was taken. And to make the best of it all, the car battery was just fine. Now, that parking lot wasn't under surveillance, unless a rogue cow happened to be watching. I mean, there are festival volunteers nearby who direct where people should park, but they weren't near our car. And truth be told, many performers haul stuff in and out of cars at the very field all day long. Had someone emptied our car, it wouldn't have seemed odd to see performance paraphernalia hauled through a parking lot. And yet no one did that. Now I realize that given world and domestic events, this is a minuscule thing. But in case you too are weighed down by the heaviness of the news, maybe you'll appreciate a story about a bunch of strangers at a music festival who live together in, well, harmony. Okay, it's a story about how nobody stole our stuff. But it's also a little light in the dark. A moment of calm in the storm, and a reminder that people really are human.
Dr. Jerry Burns is a storyteller, writer, and educator living in New York's Hudson Valley. You can find her at storycrafters.com. Burns also is an adjunct professor in the Department of Communication at the State University of New York at New Paltz. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Elizabeth Hill for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1571.